This is the Lombardi Line with Michael Lombardi and Patrick Maher on VSiN.
All right, it is the Lombardi Line as we welcome you back. We're presented by BetMGM. I'm still laughing from something Michael just told me during the break. Also still laughing because I got the picture of Kyler. Kyler does look good posted up post-surgery there as we welcome you back here on a Thursday. No Thursday night football tonight, which is, I woke up thinking about that. Like, this is an eerie feeling as we get going. I should reiterate as we open up a new hour here again, DeMar Hamlin, of course, the terrifying collapse on Monday night, is awake and showing remarkable improvement this morning. That's awesome. His father, Mario Hamlin, spoke and addressed the team yesterday. You know, what I took from that is a lot of the players and everybody said we needed that. Whatever that means, they needed somebody from the Hamlin family to address the team. And as they approach their first practice today, the Bills, of course, maybe a little jolt from hearing that their teammate is doing better, Michael.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's certainly the best news we could possibly hear. And thankfully, you know, that we're seeing improvement. That's all we really wanted to know. We wanted to know that he was getting better. Everybody that I talked to medically said this was going to take some time to really know more about it as the weeks go on. So I'm encouraged, and thankfully our prayers are getting answered.
100%. Well put. And we don't know what's going to happen as far as the Bills-Bengals game. Will it be made up? Will it be canceled? We shall see as the season progresses. Of course, Week 18 is upon us. We're going to have Samich joining us in a bit. In his notes, he did note that, you know, Week 18 has a preseason feel to it with a lot of the unknowns and who's starting, quarterbacks we haven't seen. So it's always one of those for a better. It's an interesting and confounding week as we head towards the end of the year. Now, a team that isn't headed to the postseason, that's the Washington Commodores, as we like to call them, the Commanders. And they're going to start a new quarterback here. We have a bigger conversation about Ron Rivera to have in just a second. However, Dallas is at Washington. Sam Howell under center, the rookie. And Dallas is laying 7. Carson Wentz, Taylor Heineke, their futures as well. Your thoughts overall on the Commanders here?
Well, I mean, the Commanders went from, you know, taking Wentz off of IR and moving him into the starting lineup when, you know, after the loss, and then he played in the second half against San Francisco, and feeling like, okay, you know, now that we've kind of feel like who we know we are as a team, he'll give us a lift. And that lift never happened from the first play of the game, throwing interceptions left and right. So I think this is the end. This decision to inactivate him, to basically make Tyler Heineke the backup quarterback and go with Sam Howell, tells me that Carson Wentz will be a free agent at the end of the year. You can book that. You can write that down. And so now it leaves the Washington football team really in search of. Will it be Sam Howell? No one knows. Sam Howell doesn't know. The coaches there don't know. But at least they'll have a tape against a good defense to give them a kind of an idea about where they need to go with this player or what he's capable of doing. And so they move forward. But to me, this is another team that is in search of. Now, I think there's another layer to this, too, and you mentioned it, the Ron Rivera layer. You know, as you know from being intimately involved with the Washington area and understanding it, if this was the normal Dan Snyder, you know, Ron wouldn't have made it through the third year, right? But now we're 5 years removed from Ron having a winning record as a head coach. I mean, does someone ask the question? Maybe. Do we need a change? I said on the pod today, I think if the new owner comes in, which is viable, there might be a new owner come in by the, you know, trust me, if Snyder agrees to a sale, this transaction will go through the speed of light. There'll be a change. I mean, it'll take no time at all. It'll be like a battlefield promotion. It's going to go. And when that new owner comes in, do they keep them? Do they change? It's going to be interesting.
Nobody has had a more interesting coaching career. Ron Rivera, known as a great guy, a character guy, he settled the situation down as far as the climate there in Washington. Ron Rivera bravely fought cancer. We understand all of that, so we'll put that over there. Ron Rivera has been a head coach for 11 seasons in the NFL. He's had 3 good seasons. The rest have been markedly much worse, including 7-9 Washington, 7-10, and he's sitting 7-8. Just a weird career, because really the outliers are 12-4, 15-1, and 11-5. Other than that, it's been sub 500.
Yeah, and I mean, there's no denying it, right? It doesn't get better. And if do you think it's gotten better in D.C.? They can't fix the quarterback. Their offense is still – the offensive line is broken. It was broken before the season started. Like, the planning of the offensive line was bad. You know, and they changed offensive lines, and they brought in, you know, Juan Castillo to help with the tight ends, and they made really no changes to the coaching staff. Now, in fairness to them, they did get better on defense. They're much better third down, much better in the red zone. But when they had to play great defense against teams that ran the ball, even Atlanta was able to run the football on them. They weren't able to do it. I mean, let's face it, Deshaun Watson won last week making no plays. They missed a tackle. Kyle Fuller misses the tackle on Amari Cooper. That goes for a touchdown. But it was Chubb who ran the ball that won the game. I mean, there's not a lot of hope and optimism, I think, here for the Washington Commanders.
And they've got a decision to make. I mean, they're going to give Howell this one game, I guess, audition, but he's probably not your starter next year. Heineke's not going to be your starter next year. You see, the confounding thing with Heineke is he's such a crowd favorite that he probably can't be on the roster moving forward. You know, because yeah, there's just this clamor for him as well.
He'll be a well-paid backup, and that's always a nice job to have in the NFL. I mean, that's a great job if you can get it.
Especially what we just talked about, 64, 65 different starters at the position this year. Heineke will get paid for another 8 years, which is great. Carson Wentz isn't the answer in Washington, so it'll be curious. You know, the Jets, the Commanders, there's a couple of teams here. Houston, who's probably going to draft a quarterback. There's some teams here that have big-time decisions, including the Commanders, at quarterback. And frankly, they have a decision to make at head coach, the Commanders as well.
Yeah, no, I mean, and I think to me that's going to be what's going to have to happen, right? I think you have to see what it is. And there's so much uncertainty that this might be one that, first of all, I don't think Dan Snyder's going to make a decision about Ron Rivera the Tuesday after the season. Because I think he's already lining up for his residency in France. I mean, I think, you know, all his companies have transferred. That now that he's a resident of France, so he might be moving out of the country. And once he sells his team, so I think that's going to be a delay. But I do expect some resolution on the sale of his team because we know the bids came in, what, last week, 2 weeks ago? You know, I think we're going to see something there.
The rumor is he can't stand Jeff Bezos, the owner of Amazon. So he can't stand him. So he might out of spite, not sell the team. But Bezos can certainly offer more money than anybody else. We know that.
Yeah. Yeah, no doubt. I mean, at the end of the day, you might hate somebody, but green is always the most comforting thing.
Yeah.
No, nothing says I'm sorry better than green.
Also, nothing says I'm sorry like jumping on your yacht and heading to the Amalfi Coast like your boy Dan Snyder can do to get away from all this drama. Just a weird, weird dude. A weird dude is Mike McDaniel. However, early on, the reports and the results were good for the Dolphins. Now they've lost, what, 5 straight? They win against the Jets and the Patriots lose against the Bills. They're in the postseason. But what have you seen as far as a juxtaposition from last year's Dolphins to this year's Dolphins? Because obviously the vibes with the Dolphins or just the perception this year has been so high.
Oh, I mean, everybody, you know, you say the Dolphins are a better team this year than they were last year. Everybody would say, oh, there's no doubt they're much better. Yeah, they throw the ball down the field. They make more explosive plays. But in terms of they have the same record going into week 18 as they did last year, right? Same record. They lost to start the season. They had that winning streak to end the season, right? And they make more plays in the passing game, no doubt. But they don't play complementary football. I mean, the problem is their offense only has the ball for 28 minutes. They're not a great third down team. And their defense, which is not very good, playing worse this year than it did last year, they've given up more points in 16 games than they gave up all of last year before we play the last game of the year. It's substantially more. So they can't get off the field. They don't play man-to-man. The defense has taken a regression. It's playing more. There's no complementary football going on. They don't run it as well as they did last year. Now, they make better plays throwing the ball down the field. There's no denying that. The yards per attempt are incredibly better, and Tua plays better. But there are other things that have given – so there's a give and take here. And in that give and take, the results are, wait a minute, this hasn't worked out. You hired a head coach – you wanted him to run the football and be the guy, but that's not the case.
Also, some uncertainty. you know, you've mentioned Javid Best in the past, a running back. Remember, he got shut down because of the concussions. Now, just because Tua is a bigger name and plays a premium position at quarterback, does that mean that they're going to forego his potential health? Like, I think there's still real concerns and question marks around Tua moving forward.
There has to be, right? There has to be. I mean, there has to be. Because you're worried about his health, his long-term health. I mean, we remember the last concussion. There was a lot of conversation, I don't know true or not, about his family not wanting him to keep, you know, like, you think about life after football. You have to. I mean, you know, look, this has been a problem. And, you know, he has not stayed healthy through games. It's not his fault. It's just it's an unfortunate situation. And you want the young man to be able to have the quality of life that he needs to have. And if you're the Miami Dolphins, you've got to be worried about it too.
And certainly the report card for Mike McDaniel, the first-year head coach there, I would say mixed, right? Would you say mixed for McDaniel?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's going to be a fallout. I think if the owner – now, the owner's impatient, right? The owner, when he broke the grounds for the new facility, which they're in now, he made it very clear last year that he expected to go to the Super Bowl fairly quickly. And that was one of the reasons why Brian Flores isn't the coach anymore. He felt there was discontent. Now, I'm not saying McDaniel's going to lose his job after a year, but I'm saying this guy, if he has a chance to get Sean Payton or Jim Harbaugh, does he do that? I mean, does he do that? Because the guy is impatient, there's no doubt, and he's very wealthy, and he can buy anything he wants. So he wants a Super Bowl, and this season can't make him happy.
Back to where we started. Your boy Ron Rivera's got some good PR. We should all get his agent or whatever he's working with.
No doubt.
Because you dig through some of the numbers, it's jarring. Three good seasons, the rest have been subpar, to say the least, for Coach Rivera. When we come back, Mike Somich, professional handicapper, he's got some plays for you.
Featuring former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now, once again, here's Patrick Maher.
Okay, the Lombardi Line is brought to you by BetMGM. It's the king of sportsbooks. The reconfigured app is awesome for an in-game experience. Check it out, BetMGM.com, or download the app. As we got you back here on a Thursday edition, January 5th, the good news, Damar Hamlin improving, which is awesome to see. Michael Lombardi, I'm Patrick Maher. We welcome in professional handicapper Mike Somich, RacingDudes.com. This will make Michael laugh. We'll give Somich a chance to flex, but because he's been killing it on the show. Although he's been added to the sheet. So if you're a VEASAN pro, you get Somich's plays, you get Gable's plays, you get everybody's plays. Yesterday, he handed out a Czech Republic versus Sweden under 20 world championship hockey play. Where the hell did that come from, Somich?
You got to find value where value is. So it's important to look at the whole board. A lot of times the best places to bet are the most underbet markets. And not a lot of people pumping in money into the U20 World Championships. So thought that line wasn't quite right, and we were able to cash it. So that was a good way to start the day.
I mean, my question is, how do you know the line's not right? Like, I can't even pronounce the name of the two teams, let alone get to the line. I mean, how do you know the line's not even right?
I'm a sucker for hockey. I love watching it.
Oh, you love hockey.
High school. Yeah, and so yeah. I've been watching the U20 championships, and this Czech Republic team is really tough. They played well. They beat Canada in the prelims. I thought they should be more of a 175-type favorite in that game, and so got to take the value where the value's at. Minus 125 wasn't quite correct in my mind, and we got it home.
And also, man, full disclosure, there was also, I know you know people, there was a syndicate, I think, out of Vegas that was hitting that game as well. So Somich was involved. And
money
we should
is green.
Give you
money is green. It doesn't matter
if
how
it's
you
green,
make it, right?
We'll take it. I'll deposit it over at oldchase.com. Also, we should give you a chance to flex. Have you missed on the show over the past like 10 weeks? What do you got here?
It's been a pretty solid year on the Lombardi Line. Joined in week two. We've only had two losing weeks on the Lombardi Line picks since then, up 14 units with two outstanding plays. We've got the Titans under 7.5, and the Titans to miss the playoffs is those two outstanding. So if the Titans lose to the Jags, we're up 16 units for the year here since week two on the Lombardi Line.
I love it. See, what I love about you, Mike, is you keep score. Like, we have a lot of guys give out picks. No one keeps score. Like, it's not, to me, it doesn't, I don't bet, but I give out picks, but I keep score. Because I the only way you're going to get better, it's what the great Charlie Munger says. If you don't keep count, you can't improve. And so, like, you know, everybody gives out these picks, but I think to me, and what people are afraid of is if you have a losing record, people are going
right.
to – we all have losing records, right? We all – I mean, last week I was 1-2. I took the Chargers. I took the Rams one against the Chargers. That was a disaster, you know. And so you all have this. I mean, I've been able to catch Russo because I've made bad decisions along the way, but I think I've learned something. But if you don't keep score, you can't. And I applaud you for that.
That's one of the most important things about gambling. I mean, when I was playing poker professionally, you learn more from your losses than your wins. You got to sit there and dissect the hands that you lose money on and how did you misplay it? What mistakes did you make? It's the exact same thing here in sports handicapping. If you're not looking back at why you lost, what games you lost, you're never going to win. You have to understand that why you're not successful to be successful in the future.
Michael yep. Lombardi, Mike Somich, both very fastidious is what we've learned over the years. Okay, let's get to this. Before we get to your plays, you said, interesting week, almost feels like the preseason with some of the line moves on information. Mike, you want to expound upon that?
Yeah, right now, if you're in front of the information, you get massive jumps in the lines. I mean, Vikings-Chicago is a great example. That one's over a touchdown now. You get under a field goal on the Vikings earlier in the week before we found out Justin Fields wasn't playing. Feels like a lot of the information about who's in and who's out is trickling out a little bit after the line move. So clearly someone's in front of it. It's a lot like the preseason where you can figure out who's playing, who's not playing. You get in front of those line moves, and you're able to get immense amount of value. This Vikings game is a perfect example of that because, like I said, you have a Vikings team who needs to win, a Chicago team who needs to lose, and you were able to lay under a field goal early in the week. Not surprising that we saw Justin Fields out here.
My question is, why was this game before Fields got out? Why was this game so was only less than it was 1.5? I didn't understand that. I mean, I know there's no respect for Minnesota in the market, but I mean, that seemed a little. Has anybody watched this Bear team? Since Monday night, they haven't won a game, and they go from other than the quarterback making a play here or there, that they can run the ball, but they can't do anything else offensively or defensively.
I have no idea. I was excited to bet this 1.5. I bet it on Sunday night 1.5. I have no idea why this was lined that low. This Bears defense is basically a JV squad after trading away a lot of their top tier players. And you had to assume at some point they were shutting down Fields. He got hit way too much last week. I was surprised he played last week. So I was expecting him to. I thought it was a pretty good possibility they'd sit him out this week, even though he didn't get that rushing record from the quarterback's position, which is, I know, something they were shooting for there in Chicago.
Okay, Mike, you have four plays this week. We'll start off with a teaser. You're going to wrap Cleveland and Minnesota up in a tease.
Yeah, we talked about that Minnesota game. They're at 7.5 right now. You can tease them down to -1.5. I think they get the job done against Chicago. And like I said, Chicago needs to lose this game. Sitting right now on that number two draft pick spot with somewhat of a chance to get to the one spot. We'll talk about Houston here in a second. No interest for them to fall to number three. They have their quarterback in their mind of the future. Trading out of that two spot could be very valuable to them, or just drafting Will Anderson out of Alabama could be a good step forward as well. So I think the Bears are really incentivized to lose. The Vikings are incentivized to win. They're still battling for playoff positioning. So I like the Vikings quite a bit. Then I'm going to tease the Browns up to +8.5 this week. They are facing... the Steelers. The Steelers are laying 2.5. In my spot here, I think this Browns offense finally kind of started to click a little bit last week. I thought Deshaun Watson looked a little bit more like himself last week, showing signs of improvement there. And this Steelers team just doesn't score too many points. The total sitting at 40. We talked about teasers 2 weeks ago. You have a low total, and you can get in these long areas where you're teasing up through 3, through 4, through 6, through 7, all the way to 8.5. I like that number of points here. I think this is a low-scoring game, 17-14, 16-13, one way or the other. And if I'm catching 8.5, I'm feeling pretty comfortable here. So go Browns +8.5, Vikings -1.5 to kick off the card this week.
Yeah, I mean, I think the one thing we know about the Steelers is they're going to play close games. And the Browns-Steeler games are going to be kind of, you know, Mike's going to protect Pickett and not let him go out there and turn the ball over, which gives the Browns a chance to get in the game. But the way Watson has played, you know, it's going to be a low-scoring game. You got a rookie quarterback against a guy who hasn't played very well, and the Browns' passing offense hasn't played well. So I'm with you on that. I like both ideas there.
Okay, next one. Houston's – go ahead, please, Mike.
I would say you also have a Steelers team coming off a really tough game, physical game against the Ravens, and later in the schedule last week. So short rest off a physical game means I don't think the Steelers are going to they'll be hyped for this one, but it's going to be tough for them to really blow out Cleveland.
Okay. You mentioned the Texans. Let's get to it. They're at Indy. You're going to catch the 1.5 in the first half with the Texans here.
Yeah, the reason why I'm playing first half and not full game is because Houston really should lose this game. They should want to lose this game. They want to hold on to that number one draft pick. But I think the Texans are a better team than the Colts right now. Indianapolis seems to have quit on their second coach this season. They've only put up 13 points the last two games against the Giants and the Chargers. It's the team's really struggling on offense. Now we have Sam Ellinger coming in here, another new starting quarterback for Jeff Saturday. This experience just failed. I mean, they beat the Raiders. They have not won since. Houston, on the other hand, for the most part this season, has been pretty standardized across the board. They're not facing any injury issues. They're playing with the same players on both the offensive and defensive side of the ball. And they've been playing hard for the most part. Last week, they kind of threw a stinker in there against Jacksonville. But that was predictable, specifically off the win against Tennessee. A lot of times you have these teams, when they play a big game like that and they get that win, you're going to expect a down spot. I think Houston plays well here, specifically in the first half. So I'll take Houston plus 1.5 in the first half.
Yeah, I mean, we had this long conversation on GM Shuffle today with Femi about this game. And look, you can't you can't go down to Lovie Smith's office and say, we got to play for the draft pick, Lovie, because you might fire Lovie on Tuesday. And he's going to go to the press and say, they told me to lose the game and then they fire me. What's the deal here, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, you got to just keep, Lovie's going to try to win this game with everything in his power. And Saturday in the park, he thinks he's the greatest. He thinks he hasn't made a mistake since he's become a head coach. So, you know, that keeps going on. If he wins the game, he'll probably become exec coach of the year. So I think Houston will play with everything they have. I'm not sure Indianapolis will. I think they probably have toned out Saturday in the park by now.
Okay. Let's get to your last two. We just have about a minute. Daboll coach of the year at 3-1 and the Cowboys laying 7. Go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, I'll fire through Daboll Coach of the Year real quick. I think a big thing here is that it's top four voting this year for the first time. I think Brian Daboll is going to show up in second place on close to 75% of the ballots, and that will give him a massive edge. If he gets even 15-20 first place votes and is in second in most of those ballots, it would take almost 50 of the remaining 80 votes for either Sirianni or Shanahan in the first place to just be competitive. So because I think he's going to take down so many second-place votes, I think Daboll has some value there, sitting at plus 300 or plus 350, depending where you're playing at. And then I'm just done with this Washington team. Dallas needs to get the win here. They're laying 7 on the road. It's going to be a tough game for Washington to get up for. They were in the playoff hunt up until last week. It's a lot harder to play spoiler right after your season was spoiled. If you've been out of the playoffs for a while, it's easier to get up for these games. Washington just misses the playoffs last week. Now they have to come back and face a rival. I don't think they're fully up for this game. Dallas needs it. Give me the Cowboys minus 7.
Good job.
Great work, Mike.
Yeah, really great work all season long. We'll continue to talk to Mike Somich, of course, racingdudes.com. And if you're looking for under 20 women's hockey, you've come to the right spot. Thank you, Somich. Appreciate it.
Men's at least.
Oh, pardon me. We don't discriminate, that's for sure. Lombardi line. We'll see you, Mike Somich. Appreciate you. Coming next, another Mike Palm.
Listening to the Lombardi Line on VSiN, featuring former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now, once again, here's Patrick Maher.
Okay, we call it VP79 because you become a VSiN Pro for $79 through March Madness. The best deal of the year, plus $20 in credit to the VSiN online store. So, again, you get everything we offer. Pros have made money all season. Become one. VSiN.com/subscribe. It's $79 through March Madness. VSiN.com/subscribe to get the pro tools as well. Michael Lombardi there. I'm Patrick Maher, of course. We are welcomed now by, of course, Circa and VSiN Bon Vivant, Mike Palm. And Mike, when we talk about the terrifying collapse of DeMar Hamlin on Monday, first off, encouraging signs today as everything seems to be going in the right direction, which is awesome, having a great recovery. But there are some residuals. And you there at Circa, you're kind of one of those guys that puts together contests and deals with logistics. So how would you approach the AFC and the playoff ramifications here?
Well, let's first, and good morning, Patrick. Good morning.
Good morning.
Michael, we say peekaboo, marquee. We see you. Happy 100th birthday to Virginia McCaskey. The oldest living owner of any major sport team in the United States and longest tenured owner in the NFL now. Of course, the oldest daughter of George Halas. But let's talk specifically about what the ramifications were and then moving forward. So The game being suspended on Monday night, let's talk about the live bets, because Jeff Benson's taking a lot of criticism here, but I think it's really unfair, and I'd be the last person really to defend him on Twitter because he's dug his own grave there. But look, we have a rule. The house rules are what gaming licensed institutions submit to the gaming board, and then what we are expected to do is follow the house rules. For our games, for NFL games and most sports, the game must be played within 100 miles of where it was originally scheduled, if postponed or suspended, and within 8 days. So the NFL statement the game won't be played this week still doesn't bar it from being played Tuesday, although it would seemingly be ridiculous unless they cancel games this weekend. But anyhow, those bets are still suspended until we know the game won't be played by Tuesday. And when we know that for sure, we would refund those bets. In terms of the contest, thank God nobody had them in Survivor. Or they would have been eliminated because not played within the week. In the millions, and we're down to, you know, the last week here, in our house rules, if a game doesn't get played, it's a half point. So whether you had the Bengals or you had the Bills, and a lot of people had the Bengals on Monday night, you got a half point. At the Westgate, no, it's zero. So that's as far as it goes. Also, Michael, I know you look at our lines coming out each week to help with the live betting for the Circa Million. We did not include the Bills-Patriots game in the millions this week because we don't know if it's going to be played. It's still up in the air. And look, if we put it up there, people can choose it just to get the half point, trying to handicap that it won't be played, and that's not fair either. So we left it out of the rotation. Now,
that's a smart play.
Yeah. Now, as far as what the NFL is going to do, I mean, there's a lot of possibilities here. I don't know how they make this game up unless they push the playoffs back a whole week, wild card weekend, divisional weekend, championship weekend, and then they don't have the weekend between the Super Bowl. The more likely scenario, of course, is they'll go by win percentages for seeding. But now we're hearing the NFL's looking at several options, and I know they have to work with the players' union, but looking at several options with, do you give the one seed? You know, it all comes down to Buffalo, Kansas City, and Cincinnati, who's affected by this. Do you give the one seed the option of playing an extra game but getting home field in the conference championship game? Do you play neutral site games if two out of those three teams are involved? If it's Cincinnati, Buffalo in the second round, do you play it in Detroit? If it's Kansas City against the winner of that in the AFC championship game, do you play it in Miami? It's all very intriguing. We've taken Super Bowl futures off the board for the AFC teams because until we firmly know where these games are going to be played and how the seeding is going to be done, it's not fair. NFC, obviously, to get to the Super Bowl, we know what the path's going to be, so those teams are still up. But right now, AFC teams are off the board at Circa.
I think, you know, everything you said, I don't know how anybody could complain about what you said there. I mean, to get a half a point in a game that wasn't played is fair, you know, because, you know, why not? I mean, and so I think taking the Patriot game off, we don't know if it's going to get played. Plus, we don't know how to handicap that game. I mean, how do we know how that's going to go? You know, especially as we're getting more positive news about Hamlin. Yeah, that's great, but that doesn't help. We don't – Hamlin getting better helps the player's mindset, but we don't know the effect of that game, the residue of that game. I keep saying this to people, that those players protected us from seeing something that we don't want to see, which was him getting medical attention back, and they protected, they formed that tight huddle around him, and that causes some trauma, and I think that trauma is going to need therapy, and I think all that's going to affect as the games go forward.
Mike, I don't know if you were at the book on Monday, but I would imagine, I mean, there isn't a more fun book to be a part of a game than Circa Sports. I would imagine the vibe was weird on Monday night when that happened.
You know what I would compare it to? And it's many years ago, and I was a young person, but the somberness of the moment was when the Challenger exploded on live TV. Because you don't often witness tragedy on live TV. And I was in a first grader watching it in a classroom, and you just, it's the shock, the terror, you know, all these emotions going through you, and there's very few moments like that that you're ever going to have in life.
Good one.
Yeah, and that's a great one. I can remember I was at the 49er offices, and I was walking in, and Carrie, this girl who answered the phone there, she had a little television, and I could still remember that day as vivid as anything, just like 9/11. You know, we don't typically see that, and you just knew, you know, instantly, like Sean McDermott knew, like Zach Taylor knew, like Joe Buck and Troy Aikman. This was bigger than just, let's get on with the game.
Yeah, I remember walking down to the lunchroom. We did the whole entire school went down. They took out the big TVs and we watched the Challenger. That was terrifying. I'm sure Mike, same age, you were in the same position. So again, the Buffalo Bills have put out a statement. That's first and foremost that, of course, DeMar Hamlin is doing better. His father spoke with the Bills yesterday. Apparently that gave the team a jolt. But I mean, there's just so much that goes into this, including, you know, Mike, this is a team in Buffalo that has to turn around and host New England and lay what, 6.5 through 7.5 at a couple of shops this weekend.
In a game that New England is still very live. I mean, Miami's a dog now with Skylar Thompson supposedly going to start here and Glennon probably going to get playing time too, because even Skylar Thompson can't get through a full game. You know, we've seen that as well down there in Miami. So it's a very important game. It's an important game for Buffalo. And it, to Michael's point, I always said the last week of the season is the toughest to handicap. The first week is the second toughest.
Yeah, but at least the first Good week, point. You know all the teams are playing, and you don't know who's all playing. But this week, you know, like Minnesota, yeah, okay, you got Nate Peterman playing for the Bears at 7.5-point line, you know, but does Minnesota call off the dogs in the third quarter and, you know, all of a sudden, the we're seeing Nick Mullen out there, you know, and then that's a, you know, so it's so hard. I think, to me, like, we know the Lions – just because of the mindset, they're going to play 60 minutes regardless. They're not going to take Goff out of the game no matter what happens. I think you got that one. You can count on that. The Ravens, Bengals, we know that's a – I would urge people this week to just focus on where you can really get two sides of the story and see how that works out, because you can at least handicap that. I mean, the Giants, Philly, yeah, it's easy to say the Eagles are going to win. If you bet, what's the money line on that? What, plus 900, plus 1,000, right? I mean, minus 1,000. I mean, it's ridiculous, right? So we know the Eagles are going to win that game because the Giants are in full retreat mode. But the problem is, what happens when the Eagles go in full retreat mode?
I'd like to take your comment about Minnesota, Michael, as a transition to Survivor, because I want to catch it here at the end of this first segment.
Please.
So all three advanced. You were right. The Giants was the play. Two out of the three took the Giants. The other gentleman took the Lions. But they all advanced pretty easily. So now here we come, three people down to the final week. They all have Jacksonville available. So Brown A really doesn't have another choice the way I look at it. He did have the Chargers, but now they're a dog in Denver. He's going to take Jacksonville. Now, interesting, Jed has Seattle available as well. I think Seattle's an interesting choice here. They're still live, and they get the Rams at home. And the enemy within has Minnesota. This line, of course, has gone north of 7 with the news from that they're going to try to play to win to get the 2 seed, and obviously Fields is not going to play for the Bears. So it's going to be interesting. You know, obviously, if they wanted to chop it up, they would all just take Jacksonville, and then win or lose, it's a three-way split.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know why. That to me, it's you make $2 million, you make that, you know. Yeah. I mean, what they're each would get $2 million, right, Mike? It's $6
yeah.
million.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, a little, like $2.4 million. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Now what happens if they all took Jacksonville and they lost?
It's a split. No matter if they all take Jacksonville, then we already know they all get $2.4 million, because win or lose, it ends this week.
I got it. Mm-hmm. Okay, great. They yep. should all take.
You know, we're talking about a lot of money when we leave out the .4. When we just say, hey, $2 million, and we leave out $400,000. Hey, by the way, logistics, and then we'll get the Palms pressing 3. Were you okay with the flex on Detroit and Green Bay Sunday night?
What choice did they have? What choice did they really have unless they were going to move to Jacksonville? The Jacksonville game is really the game that has no other impact to it, right? I mean, that's the thing about the Detroit game is they could be eliminated with the Seattle win. That's the only bad thing about the flex.
Correct. Yep. Circuit, the Survivor contest has been just an unbelievable great. Ride this year. It really has been. And great updates there from Mike Palm. When we come back, Palm's pressing 3. Remember, Lombardi has no clue what's coming. That's next here on the Lombardi Line, presented by BetMGM. It's VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Featuring former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now, once again, here's Patrick Maher.
Okay, BetMGM, the king of sportsbooks, unleashes the spirit of Vegas, BetMGM Rewards. So, again, every time you make a wager at BetMGM, you can earn BetMGM reward points that you can redeem for online bonus credits like free bets, It's never been easier to join the action on the new BetMGM app. It features a fresh redesign with improved features and quicker navigation. If you're planning a trip to Vegas, you can also convert your BetMGM points into airfare, dining, shows. It's all there. It's the best loyalty program in the game. 1-800-GAMBLER. You got to be 21 years or older. We're back. Lombardi Line. Michael Lombardi. I'm Patrick Maher. Mike Palm, as he does customarily on Thursday, in time for Palm's pressing three. I'll get out of the way. Let's go with number one.
Michael, has Tua started his last game in Miami or even his last NFL game? Given what has already happened to Tua and now with the DeMar Hamlin situation, is an NFL team willing to pay and employ a quarterback who could have a tragic ending on the field that none of us would want to see? We know where you stand on Tua as a quarterback, but from a health perspective, how would you handle this if you ran the Miami Dolphins?
I would be very concerned, and I think that, past performance predicts future achievement, right? So last year he didn't make it through all the games, correct? So, you know, and he hasn't been able to make it through all the games this year. So you're worried about that. You're worried about his health. You know, he's played in 36 games. He started 34, but, you know, he's missed time. I mean, and so that's been a little bit of an issue. And so neurologically, you want to make darn sure that he is not going to have life after football affected. And I think as an executive, you have to assume that if this is continual, then you have to prepare for the outcome, which obviously they did with Teddy Bridgewater, but Teddy can't stay on the field. So I would be really concerned. Look, my problem with Tua has been the polarization of opposites, right? It's been he's great, he's elite, he's tremendous, and then there's the he's no good. And I'm saying let's put him in the middle. He's got accuracy, he's got touch. He's not a great deep ball. He's not a great, doesn't have great arm, doesn't have great movement. He's not elite and he's not a bust, but he's not someone that can carry a team to a Super Bowl. He needs a supporting cast. And as much of the supporting cast as they've given him this year, offensively, other than their big playability, they really haven't improved offensively. He's improved, but their team hasn't.
Response, Mike Palm?
Well, he's, you know, Michael always has balance to his answer, just like he's speaking about the imbalance of opinions here. So that's why we trust him. He's been there. He's done that. And he looks at all angles here. Second level thinking.
Number two.
Michael, number two is a bit of a selfish question. I do hold a ticket on Jacksonville plus 380 to win the South. So I ask this from my perspective on how to handle this game. Can Mike Vrabel come up with some magic to put a scare into the Jaguars or even beat them on Saturday night? He's definitely had a two full weeks to form a defensive game plan, given that the game against Dallas last Thursday was meaningless, and is also on more rest than Jacksonville.
Yeah. I mean, you got to take that into account, right? And I think what really is going to matter for Mike Vrabel is the last game that he played against his team. When he got the lead, when he started out in front, and he thought, okay, I got this thing, I'm going to go somewhere, I'm playing from in front, but not so fast. It was 14-0, and it became 14-7. And then he couldn't do anything after that. And then he turned the ball over repeatedly. And those turnovers were really almost self-inflicted. I mean, Tannehill throws the ball, stares down the receiver to the safety. Henry gets the ball stripped over by the sideline that falls into Walker's hands. I think if you're Vrabel, Vrabel's saying, look, we can't get into a track meet with this team. We got to slow the pace down. We're going to have to run the football. We're going to have to play our best, and we have to prepare for their passing game because they're not going to run the ball on us. They're not going to try to run the ball. I mean, Peterson's looking for an excuse not to run the ball, and he's going to get one against us. The Achilles heel that we've shown in our team has been the fact that we have not been able to defend the pass. And we've got to do a better job against them. And we've got to be able to take those plays that Lawrence made against us the last time that were sensational plays. You know, they were like, you don't duplicate those plays. Those plays aren't on tape. They're not scheme plays. They're just great throws in the right spot at the right time. And he's got to say, we got to take those. We got to hope they don't happen. Because if this game gets in the 20s, Tennessee can't win it. And if you're Doug Peterson, you're saying we got to get play from in front and make Dobbs participate. Now, they're never going to let Dobbs participate. They're going to run screens and all the stuff with Henry. But if they can extend the game like they did the first time, they're going to win. They're the better team. They're the better team. I think the line's too long, but I think Jacksonville's the better team.
What's the play for Mike Palm with that Jags future in pocket?
I think I take the six and try to middle it in this spot.
I think
right?
You do too.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, forget absolutely. About forget or play a quarter on the money line and three quarters on the point spread, something like that.
What I like to see is I look up at Palm's pressing three, and I see a speed round. Let's get started.
This is somewhat of a speed round, and we're going to do a topic you're very familiar with, Michael, since you've just completed your next novel, which focuses in large part on the Hall of Fame. I'm going to ask you some questions about potential Hall of Famers, and then you can answer at the end. Is Mike Tomlin a Hall of Famer, and is he not criminally underrated as a head coach? Is his division rival, John Harbaugh, a Hall of Famer? Will Pete Carroll make the Hall of Fame, and should he? And did Russell Wilson sink his Hall of Fame chances this year?
Okay, well, let's start off. First of all, what I try to do in the Football Done Right is set up a criteria of not just who goes to the Super Bowl, who's won a Super Bowl, and all that. And so that we can divert this whole thing where George Allen has won 70% of his games, only coached in 100, and went to a Super Bowl, but then Marty Schottenheimer's won 200 games, but didn't go to a Super Bowl and can't get in. So what I try to do in Football Done Right is basically come up with a criteria. And since I came up with a criteria, I had to overlay some of these guys that are coming out. Mike Holmgren would pass the criteria. Mike Tomlin would pass the criteria. Pete Carroll would pass the criteria based on win percentage, Super Bowl, all those things, right? Tom Flores would not have passed the criteria. Dick Vermeil would not have passed the criteria. See, here's the problem. When you don't have a criteria, you play off one another. So I asked Femi today on the podcast, I said, Femi, Ed Too Tall Jones or DeMarcus Ware, who should get in the Hall of Fame? He thinks Ware should be in the Hall of Fame, but then, wait a minute, Ed Too Tall's not in. How about Harvey Martin and Ed Too Tall? Where are you going there? He's not in. Harvey's not in the Hall of Fame. But you want to put DeMarcus Ware in because he's fresher? Because he's got a platform? See, this is what happens. We don't have it. We have no criteria. So we argue who argues the loudest in the room. When you have a criteria, it's simple. All the Pete Carroll detractors that say he doesn't manage the game correctly, you probably have a good point. But his record speaks for itself, and you can't deny it. Now, Russell Wilson, one Super Bowl, one big mistake. I don't think he's a Hall of Fame player. I think he's a good player. I don't think he's a Hall of Fame player. We started talking about receivers. Okay? Does Torrey Holt get in the Hall of Fame? Andre Johnson get in the Hall of Fame? Steve Smith's, you know, name wasn't in the top 15. Well, you know, Paul Warfield averaged he had 80 some catches, 600. He's in the Hall of Fame, right? He got in there. Charlie Taylor, the same thing. When you prorate touchdowns to receptions, all of a sudden those numbers look a little different because we're in a league now where they're getting a ton of catches. Back in the day when Charlie Taylor was playing and Paul Warfield, you know, you had to make hay on those catches.
You call it a novel. He's not Agatha Christie. He's writing about football. He's trying to educate us on football here, Mike Palm. Call it a novel, Football Done Right.
Well, it is. It's novelistic. I mean,
Hold on. Let me throw it back at you. Mike Tomlin, yes or no, Palm?
Oh, yes. He's a definite yes.
Harbaugh,
for me.
Yes or no, John?
I don't think he's got there yet.
Okay. Pete Carroll, yes or no?
Yeah, I'm a Pete Carroll detractor. I always call him Bozo the Carroll. The body of NFL work, I guess. I don't know. USC, too. You know that?
As bettors, he's cost you money, yes. And that affects your vote. I get that. I understand that completely. But when you take a step back and look over his win percentage, I'm not even counting USC. I mean, the guy got fired for Rich Kotite. Think about that. I mean, he's had the whole realm of his career. He got fired for Rich Kotite and he got fired for Bill Belichick. Can there be two opposite you got fired one for one of the worst coach and one for the best coach.
I argue that Don Coryell should be in, and I know that the win-loss criteria and playoffs doesn't get there, but how about his innovation and how about his coaching
tree?
There's
a separate story, yeah. And I agree with you on that. I agree that he took the game further. I think there's just like Clark Shaughnessy. He doesn't have a record, but he took the game further. He should be in there. He's done more for the game than some of these guys that are getting in right now. I mean, Bobby Beathard got in the Hall of Fame, and he picked Ryan Leaf.
And Wilson didn't sustain. Prior to these last two seasons, Russell Wilson's trajectory was, yes, Hall of Fame, but it's no now. I think we would all agree with
that. But that's like
that.
Tony Boselli. Tony Boselli's not a Hall of Famer. He didn't have a Hall of Fame career. He has Hall of Fame ability. He didn't have a Hall of Fame career. He didn't play long enough.
Read more about this and Football Done Right coming up in 2023. Mike Palm, thank you.
Thanks, fellas.
Thank you, Mike Palm. Okay. I love it.
And thank you, Michael Lombardi. Have a great day.
You too, guys.
Okay, we'll see you tomorrow here on the Lombardi Line, presented by BetMGM. Big Bets is coming up next.